heard of a preacher in a southern city several years ago. Heard this story, second or third hand. And he was at a large congregation, had been there for several years, had been a minister at several other large congregations as well. And but unfortunately also suffered from, I don't know which of the two, because I did not know the family well, but either suffered from being bipolar, manic depressive, or just plain old depression. And the part that makes the story particularly poignant and sad is that I was at least told that his wife had told him, "You need to do something about this. You need to seek treatment. You need to take whatever steps one would need to take to deal with that particular illness." But he didn't do that. And so one evening, I think that it was following an elders' meeting, but it could have been following a Sunday night service. But it was one of the two. Something was happening at the church building at that particular time. He took his truck to the back of the church parking lot, probably significant that he chose the church parking lot, and he ended his life in the front of his truck at the back of the church parking lot. I think about that guy every now and then. And the parallel with talking about burnout, there really isn't a direct parallel. I don't think that fellow was burned out. I think he had an illness that he had refused to treat. Probably he was burned out in addition to that. But the thing that is troubling, and it's the tie-in to talking to y'all about the burnout today, is that he didn't do anything about it. His wife had told him, "Now you need to do," and he didn't do that. And it's so sad that the end result was that he had to take this solution, which was obviously a terrible solution. It wasn't a solution at all. When we're talking about burnout, we are talking about the good news and bad news. Bad news is, I guess it could afflict any number of folks. The good news is that I've learned at least that there is something that you can do. I suspect that all of us know, maybe all of us happen to be that person at one time or another, of ministers who started out in an idealistic fashion. They were enthusiastic. They had all of these ideas. And as the years went on and they piled up and other things kind of piled up, they lost that edge and the idealism escaped. And they're just kind of the shell of a person. I mean, if you talk to anybody, if you talk to these three students here on the third, preachers are. But anyway, if you talk to these guys are not anticipating if they're entering ministry that when they hit 50, they're just going to hope to hang on to retirement time. That's not what they're envisioning. But yet, there are some guys who've done that very same thing. Or they've just gotten out completely. Burnout is oftentimes that thing that can eventually lead to that kind of taking place in our ministry. I experienced a burnout in the year 2000. Now, maybe we'll try to leave time for questions at the end. I think that'd be helpful. But the only problem is that I can't tell you exactly why it happened. And honest to goodness, I can't tell you really how I got out of it either. So I know you're thinking, why are you wasting our time? And the answer is, my answer for everything, well, I read a book. And this book was helpful for me. It's possible that it was just kind of an early midlife thing for me. I think that's maybe one answer. But I'm not really sure why. All I know is that I kind of muddled along through it for 6 or 7 months. I read the book that's footnoted at the end of your notes, kind of self-diagnosed myself, and I will give you the same self-test at the end of class, because I know if I gave it to you now, you'd all be taking the test and you'd find out you're burned out and you'd be bummed and you wouldn't listen. So take the test after class, and if it turns out that you score high, call your wife and, you know, plan a retreat when you get home or something. But I'm not going to give it to you now because I know you have no self-discipline. I self-diagnosed myself toward the end of the year. And there was a sense of great relief for me when I figured out, oh, this is what this is. Well, okay. I thought I was just kind of losing my spiritual mind. I was going to have to get out of preaching. And then to find out that it really was something that was at least semi-treatable, It's kind of like, you know, going to the hospital and they don't know what's wrong with you, how discouraging that is. Even if the diagnosis finally winds up to be kind of bad, at least if you know what you're dealing with, you know what kind of medicine to take. And that turned out to be my experience. On that part of your outline that has a definition, you can read all of those. I just put that in there so it'd look impressive. I just copied those out of the book. Just make one distinction in terms of defining burnout. One definition, one distinction. I'd say the best definition for me with burnout is not overwork, but undermeaning. You know, you do the same things that you've always done, but when you've done them, you basically think, what's the point? I preach, but they don't listen anyway. You know, I work with these kids in the youth group, and they still get pregnant anyway. Undermeaning, not overwork. Now, stress and overwork is one part of stress. Stress can sure contribute to burnout. But I'm sure all of y'all have had high times, a level of your life, a time of your life where you had a high level of stress, but you pretty much handled it okay. I've had a stressful month. We've had a bunch of deaths back home. I've had a very stressful month. But I'm not anywhere close to burnout. But burnout can be fueled by stress and all the things that contribute to stress. But it's not the same. It's not the same as being a workaholic. It's not the same as putting in a lot of hours. It's when you put in those hours and then you go home from the meeting and you think, I just believe I'm going to blow my brains out if I have to go to one more. Or it's that frustration and what is the point? And you don't see the point anymore. That's, at least for me, that's when you're at burnout. For example, in the year 2000, there really wasn't a correlation between stress and my feeling burned out. It wasn't a particularly stressful year. It was just a regular old year. I don't remember it being all that bad. But yet, your experience certainly may be different. The way I can talk to you about burnout is to reflect on some of the symptoms. I did not experience all of these, but several of them. One, boredom. I did have that. I remember thinking, it's just boring. And particularly, I mean, if you're in the role of a minister, I mean, you think about it, you do the same thing every week. And sometimes that's exciting, and then other times it's like, if I have to hear myself talk one more time, you know, they've got to be sick of me because I'm sick of me. And there's just not the excitement. So boredom. And closely related to that was apathy. You just don't care. I mean, if it's meaningless, why should you care about something that's meaningless, see? I mean, it naturally goes together. If you're not doing any good with whatever it is you're doing, then you certainly aren't going to be all that thrilled or all that upset. You know, so small group ministry's tanking. Well, you didn't think it was doing any good anyway, so who cares? The one thing that is, and this would probably be different for all of us, but the one thing that made me realize I had a problem, I didn't want to read anymore. Man, I love to read. I can be reading on five or six books at once. I know some of you are thinking, somebody like me, and the rest of you are thinking, he's weird. But I, you know, I can read on five or six books and just have those bookmarks scattered everywhere. I didn't even want to read fun stuff. I didn't even want to read a murder mystery, that's fun reading. I didn't even want to do that. And when I got to that point, that made me think something, at least with me, something is broken. Apathy. Depression, helplessness, hopelessness. Digging a deep rut here. I'm just feeling bad just going over all these symptoms. And the next one certainly is tied in together. Anger, cynicism, and sarcasm. You get burned out. You just get a little extra bite to that wit that people have always complimented you on. You certainly are more critical of other people. You can be more critical of yourself as well. Simple exhaustion, disillusionment, it's the same thing, meaningless. You know, you got in this to change the world, and now you wake up X number of years later, and you're no longer trying to change the world, you're just trying to keep your job. There's a big difference between changing the world and keeping your job and hoping you'll at least get cost of living this year. And so you get disillusioned with any number of things. And see, the thing is, once you start in the spiral, then you just bore on down. And it's hard to get off the spiral. And particularly when you're halfway down the spiral before you knew that you were in a spiral anyway. You know, you wake up and you go, I don't like to read anymore. And you've already, and you know, that one thing grabs your attention, but the fact is you've already been all these other things for whatever period of time it happens to be. A negative attitude toward life, work, self, other people. For years, and I'm a particularly introspective, which is just, you know, it's just part of it, part of my personality. I do a little self-monitoring on Monday, which, you know, Monday is never a good day to quit preaching, because who doesn't want to quit on Monday? But, you know, and so most Mondays it was, you know, it's okay, I'll feel better on Tuesday. But increasingly I found on Monday, I could not imagine doing what I'm doing for 5 more years. And that scared me. Because I thought I was just going to preach till they, you know, wheeled me out. Because my wife has certainly already told me I can never retire. So I just assumed, you know, that when the big church didn't want me anymore, I'd just go out here in the country and preach. And the thought of preaching 5 years in the future, it was just disheartening to me. I don't want to do this. And it didn't fade by Thursday. I mean, I'd felt that way before on a bad Monday, but it wasn't fading by Thursday. And that certainly was troublesome. And then you feel bad and you can't imagine doing it for 5 more years. And if you've got any kind of heart at all, what's your response? Your response isn't to say, well, bless your heart. Your response is just pile on more self-criticism. Well, you know, if you just love the Lord, or if you just, you know, fill in the blank, whatever it is. You have made a mess of things. And so you heap self-criticism. You're more critical of the elders who are doing the best they can. Sure, they've got failures. You're more critical of them. You're more critical of your wife. You're more critical of everybody you run into. And you certainly turn the sword inward as well. And you're more critical of yourself. So those are all the symptoms. Causes. I did find this one interesting. Oswald, in this book from the Auburn Institute, ministers who've been in a congregation more than 10 years, 50% of ministers experience burnout. And you think about that, and that does make a lot of sense, because why do a lot of us move other than money? You know, on the call of the God. But other than that, you know, God calling you to more money. But oftentimes we move because we have all these other symptoms. We're burned out, we're critical, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and this church in another town calls, and thank you, Jesus, and we're gone. And we treat our burnout by moving. Well, what if you don't move? You stay at the same congregation for 10 years. Well, who's not sick of everybody after 10 years? You're sick of them, they're sick of you. And so you experience that burnout. So I was not shocked by that 50% figure at all. The only other thing that on the reasons why our numbers had been declining back home, and they had been declining for about 2 years, which does kind of hurt your feelings a little bit. You know, it's not supposed to be about you, but if the numbers are going down. This is like crazy. I didn't even notice this for like 3 years. And I went back and I looked at my journal and looked at this. And I realized that our numbers took a bounce up in the fourth quarter of the year 2000. And that just amazingly was the quarter that I kind of started feeling a little better. You know, when all is said and done, it may not have anything to do except things weren't going all that well at church. And it's just kind of hard to deal with that. I'm preaching and more people are leaving. Well, that's certainly gratifying. So maybe it was just that things weren't going well. But other factors could go into this. You know, if you're having trouble at home, I mean, that'll burn out the best of people. You know, you're having trouble with a child that's putting you through the ringer. and then you've got all the other stresses on top of that, and you just reach that level where you can't do it anymore. I don't think everybody necessarily gets burned out. I'm thinking of one of my elders back home, former elder. This guy's like kept three jobs up into his 70s. He's workaholic, task-oriented. I'd be shocked if he ever admitted that he experienced any significant level of burnout. I don't think that means he's cold and heartless. I think it just means that he has that particular workaholic personality that really does make him immune to experiencing burnout. Certainly those of us in helping professions where you really are kind of dependent on whether they receive the help. Those of us in the helping professions are susceptible to this. And I mean, let's be honest now. We're in this to affect change in the lives of people. Bring honor and glory to God, affect change in the lives of people. And when that doesn't take place, you ought to be disappointed. You know, the teacher in the classroom, when the kids don't get it, I mean, there ought to be a certain level of disappointment. When the congregation doesn't get it, when that change is not effected, I mean, you can't just say, well, you know, hey, I did my part. I mean, there's got to be a reciprocal kind of relationship there of just as something that makes you feel good. Say, like, ministering well at the time of a death. I mean, there's a certain gratification that comes from that. You know, dadgummit, that you did some good. It was sad as could be, but you did some good. That's gratifying. Well, when that's not happening, when there's not that, at least as far as you can see, I think inevitably you're going to have to struggle with facing these issues of burnout. Oswald had four solutions to how to avoid and survive burnout, and I simply have copied his. One is restore your spiritual life. I have that one quote, clergy don't need more knowledge or skills as much as they need a deeper spiritual life. For a long time, I would catch myself feeling guilty because I'd be up in the auditorium praying at 9:30 in the morning. You know, maybe whether it's going through my prayer list and praying for people at church or just praying, period. And I would have these thoughts of, well, you know, rest of the congregation, they don't have this luxury. But I don't feel guilty about that anymore. Man, if I'm not up in the auditorium praying at 9:30 and tending to spiritual issues within my own life, then somewhere along the line something's going to get broken. We have to tend to issues related to our spiritual lives. I mean, you have to. You can't shortchange that process. Now, I understand, because you can immediately say, well, I don't feel like it. And when you get in the middle of this, I mean, that is part of the problem. You don't fix yourself overnight. I mean, like if you had told me any number of times in the year 2000 where you just need to pray more, I'd probably just want to slap you. Well, I don't want to pray. It feels, you know, fill in the blank, useless, da-da-da. And so, I mean, I understand that dynamic, you're just cutting your legs out from underneath you. There are any number of things that you could do. Perhaps you need to try something new. Are you spending any time alone? Are you spending any time in any kind of personal renewal? Do you need an accountability partner? Do you need to try journaling for, you know, you never done that before. Maybe that's something you want to try now. You may need to look at sin issues. This was not part of my stuff 3 years ago, but sometimes we get in trouble with sin, and it's because we're trying to heal an ache. I mean, I don't think every preacher. Or not preacher, even for that matter, every person that gets caught up in pornography, I don't think it's just because they like looking at pictures of naked women. There's something going on internally. There's this addictive kind of behavior. There's this obsessive compulsive behavior. And so you may need to think about sin issues and even secondarily, well, why am I having this struggle? I certainly know with at least how I drink coffee that I have to take note of and beware obsessive compulsive behavior, which that's just another way of saying addiction, and certainly, you know, let's use sin. And so you need to look at that. You're burned out, and so then that leads you over into any other number of areas. Well, you're probably not going to get fixed. You're not going to get your burnout fixed if you're still looking at stuff you shouldn't look at on the computer, to just kind of give you a real easy example. So you need to tend to your spiritual life. Two, and I don't know, preachers are bad about this. I know I do this. We separate one and two, which probably we shouldn't do. But it makes for 4 points instead of three, and I decided to go 4 points today. But I do not have a poem, so we're not going to go with three points and a poem. Restore emotional stability. I'll use an uncouth word because I'm out of the state, and it's not a Sunday morning. So that makes it okay? I'm out of state, and it's not a Sunday morning. Some of us are just screwed up. And that is a leading factor into why you're not hitting on all cylinders. You just got stuff going on that you hadn't gotten fixed. Would be an example. You know, some of us are so addicted to people pleasing. I mean, you're just a walking advertisement for burnout. Because you can't even distinguish yourself from the congregation and shepherds and approval of others. You ought to get that fixed instead of just doing little band-aids for the rest of your ministry. Some of you, if things were in a lot better shape with you and the missus, burnout would disappear. But there's this underlying tension. There's that thing that you never got fixed. And you need to be in marriage counseling. If you got to drive 100 miles away so none of the brethren know about it, well, then do that. But I know why we don't. It's because we know to fix it will cause significant amount of change and or pain, and we just don't have the energy to do it. So we just kind of mope along, which is just dumb. I don't know why we do it. I know why we do it, because we're just not willing to say, this is broken. I need to do something. But yet, that would be the exact thing. You know, your issue really isn't your elders who won't elder. Your issue is that you're dropping the ball. There's something going on at home. You get that fixed, and those elders all of a sudden don't bother you nearly as much as they used to. Or you're somehow or another able to escape this people-pleasing part of your personality. Or you deal with issues from childhood. You need to restore emotional stability. To be able to say yes and to be able to say no, both of those words with conviction, that's a good thing. I volunteered just 2 weeks ago to head up trying to do small group kind of ministry on Sunday nights. If we do it, I volunteered. I bellied up and volunteered. But the thing is, that was a willful yes. That was a, yeah, I'll do it. It didn't have anything to do with pleasing anybody at church. And it's such a, what a sweet blessing to be able to give a willful yes versus a begrudging yes because I'm afraid you won't like me if I say no. And oftentimes that can be traced kind of backwards to some things that just aren't quite right with us. Support groups. I started that year in 2000 realizing I need to talk to some people. And so I coordinated and had one of Lynn Anderson's mentoring groups, and we met during all of 2001. I pretty much was kind of through my bout, but I do think that it was helpful for others. I mean, I remember calling Lynn in the middle of 2000, and it just seemed comfortable to talk to somebody who was 1,000 miles away to kind of explain my symptoms. And he was the first one to use that phrase, under meaning. And I immediately thought, yeah, that's me. You've been reading my mail. But to have these support groups in place, I think are very, very significant. Get more winners than losers. The longer you stay at a place, the more different kind of jobs you accrue. You know, you started out doing four things. And now, a year later, you've got five. And then 3 years later, you got six. You just kind of inherit things. Well, I'll take care of that. And then you'll take care of it, you know, till you retire and go become a greeter at Walmart or something. You just kind of get stuck, you know, doing that. I don't know any way out of that, except maybe periodically you just kind of re-up with leadership and you re-decide, all right, what is it I'm supposed to do? What can happen if you're not careful is you wind up doing a lot of things that you just don't like doing them. They're not winners for you. You do them because you do them better than anyone else. You do them because they have to get done. But it's not what lights your fire. Probably what would be good for all of us, periodically, you just get a piece of paper and you write down, this is what I like to do in ministry. This is what floats my boat. And then you need to figure out a way to do more of that. And figure out a way to do less of those things that just drain the lifeblood out of you. Those, if I have to do one more, and then fill in your blank. And see, that's different for different people. Some of you may love counseling. And some of you may, if I have to talk to one more couple in trouble, just take me home right now. And so we find ourselves accumulating more losers. The things that we do because we have to, but we hate them. Well, you can fix that. It may not be easy. I don't think you have to move to do that. But you can fix that by simply becoming aware, personally aware, and trying to do more of those things. Number three, take care of your body. Time off. Exercise, recreation. I'm sure y'all have all seen those studies that say Americans are chronically sleep deprived. If you haven't, type in sleep deprived in Google. I'm sure you can pull up 50 million articles or something. But basically, all of the studies are showing Americans are getting, it varies which study you see, 30 minutes to an hour, too little sleep every night. Most people need about 8 hours sleep. There are a lot of us who are convincing ourselves that we don't and we're getting less, but the fact is we really do need 8 hours. And it's maybe, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just the fact that we're sick if we have to admit, you know, I really do function better when I sleep 8 hours. I remember admiring a church secretary in Memphis because she only had to sleep about 5 hours. Literally. I mean, she went at 90 miles. She only had to sleep about 5 hours. And I remember thinking, boy, I wish I could be like that. Well, that's just sick. I mean, to be that infatuated with activity, and that's just not right. You probably ought to start with monitoring. You know, when would you wake up if the alarm didn't go off? I mean, you can find out pretty easily how much sleep you need. You go to bed. You try to go to bed at about the same time every night, and sleep till you're ready to get up. And I'm sure you can overdo it, but there's not many of us that are overdoing it. Oswald says, and this book is for preachers. Oswald says you need to work 5 days and no more than 50 hours. He counts Sunday as a work day, so he's saying a preacher should be taking off. At least Saturday, which, of course, if you're like me, you're looking at a sermon Saturday night anyway. You need to be taken off Saturday and one other day during the week. 5 days, 50 hours. I'm just passing that on to you. Probably there are people that can do better than that, can do more than that. But if you're If you're getting close to being a crispy critter in terms of being burned out, well, that's one place to at least look at. And this is a good thing to talk with your leadership about. Do they expect you to work more than that? Well, if they do, then you either meet their expectations or y'all redefined expectations and go on. A vacation, you take time off. I have a friend of mine who's been at one church for over two decades. I don't think he's ever been burned out. Just infuriates me. And there are differences between us, but there one difference I do know is he takes time off, and I have periodically shortchanged myself. And he's never done that. He has always had enough sense to take the time off allotted to him. I looked at how many Sundays I had not preached over a five-year period when I was kind of going through the blues. And it was really shocking to me because, you know, I mean, you can be gone and preaching someplace else. That's not vacation. That's work. I don't care if you warmed up a sermon, that's still work. Now, of course, that I have ever done that, but I know some of you have. It was some amazing number of, I'd not preached 10 Sundays in 5 years. That's just stupid. Now, I still haven't changed it, but I at least have a word to call it now. You know, that's just not right. But I do say that. I'm sure there are plenty of brothers who have done that and never gotten fried, too. I'm saying for me, that really isn't the healthiest approach. Exercise. The one thing that probably saved me in 2000 is I started back running. I periodically jogged throughout my life. I started back running in the fall of 99 with a goal of running a marathon, which I did. I ran a marathon in April of 2000, ran a second marathon in December of 2000. I think I was aware of it at the time. I was running because I wasn't having any fun at church. But, you know, I could run, and here are these tangible, measurable goals. I ran 40 miles this week. I ran this much faster. I'm going to run. It was something that I could check off, which means a lot to me, to have a tangible goal that I could check off. So I really wouldn't have any fun at church, but I could escape by running. And I ran a lot. And so while it was escape and not completely healthy, I do think it helped me along the way. And I pretty much just dropped off the face of the earth and stopped exercising about 2 months after the year 2000 ended. But, you know, I'm no physical therapist, but most of us know if we aren't taking care of our bodies, that's just not a smart thing to do. And I don't know why we ignore our bodies, but yet we still do. Recreation, pronounce that correctly. You do things that truly recreate you. Mindless television, you know, to just kind of numb the pain, that's not recreating you. We're talking about recreation. Ask yourself, what do I like to do? Well, when's the last time you did that? What do I like to do? What do I look forward to doing? Well, how much of that are you doing right now? Well, I mean, I did like the running in 2000. But yet it's almost as if we don't give ourselves permission to do the things that are enjoyable. True recreation. So if that's working in the workshop, if that's, you know, if it's coaching your kids' soccer team, for one person that would be true recreation. For another, that would just be kind of a fatherly duty. But it's not like you're getting a lot of joy out of it. But it would vary from one person to the other. So what do you like to do? One of my resolutions for 04 is to have more fun. And I'm purposely seeking out and doing things that I think are fun. And for someone else, they might think, that's just crazy. But see, we're all different. Are you doing things right now? Do you periodically schedule and plan and do things that are simply fun for you? True recreation. Take care of your mind is the fourth. Reading. I'm certainly a big believer in reading. I mean, I think I can hear a guy preach and know whether he's reading or not. And maybe I'm being a little egotistical, but I sure think I see a difference in preachers who read and preachers who don't read. But maybe not. Seminars, classes, there are tons of things that one can do. One bright spot in 2000 is I made myself go to a preaching seminar over at Lipscomb. I really didn't want to go. There wasn't like a big-name person I just had to hear. I simply made myself go. And Rick Mars did three lessons on Ruth that were just remarkable. They were good. And literally, I went to that class on Tuesday. I started a three-week series on Ruth the next Sunday. And this wasn't just some blanket copying Rick's stuff. I mean, I was pumped about Ruth. And I hadn't been excited about preaching anything for several weeks. So simply getting out of my routine, being exposed to something new, that was helpful for me. As I reflected back on why did I get in a mess in 2000, it's possible that I was out of my three-year routine of doing classes. I've been in school forever, it seems like. Graduate school, part-time for 6 years, and then made a move. I was in a graduate program in Texas, and then I moved to Nashville, and I hadn't done anything like that graduate school-wise for 3 years. And so maybe that helped contribute to my malaise, but attending seminars and that kind of thing, doing or teaching anything new. Now, of course, see, here's the problem. If you spiral down, well, who wants to do anything new? It's dumb anyway. They're not going to listen anyway. So I'm not sure which comes first in this, chicken or the egg. But when you're in a good place, you are excited about doing something new. I'm thinking about doing a class on how we got the Bible. You know, a lot of people are torn up about this Da Vinci Code thing. I didn't think I'd ever see the day where people cared about manuscripts again. So I'm pretty pumped about that. I think I'm going to teach a class and put Da Vinci Code in it so they'll come. And, you know, I want to teach a class on children and baptism. We're increasingly seeing parents kind of encouraging their children to be baptized younger and younger. I'd like to teach a four-week class on that to kind of help parents make that decision. I wouldn't want to do any of this in 2000. So this is really more of when you're in a good place, this is what you look like. But it's kind of nice to be in a positive place where something new comes along and you can kind of be willing to be fired up about that. As I was putting the notes together, I did realize that the other voice in my mind, there's a part of me that thinks, you're just whining. That's all you are. Just buck up. But I remembered a stat that ran across, and I could not track it down. But this stat said they'd surveyed graduates of Southern Baptist seminaries like 40 years ago. They were surveying them at retirement time. 5% were still in ministry. So it'd be like 40 years later, 5%. That's pretty bad. So if the idea of taking more time off, taking a day off, taking your vacation, taking care of yourself, not going so hard, if that seems like being a baby, what if the result of you doing that means that when you're 55, you're still pumped about preaching instead of just being this shell of a person? What if it means at 68... you're still looking for opportunities to serve because you took better care of yourself back here? Now, I mean, there are other options than just going full bore for 20 years and then getting out and selling insurance or doing something else. There are other options. But see, we got to take care of ourselves. And that is the key word, at least for me, as I reflect back to 2000. We have to take care of ourselves. That's not the elder's job. I mean, they need to, you know, be concerned, but you're probably not going to tell them the truth anyway. I wouldn't have told my elders in 2000, you know, I need a month off. I'm feeling a little blue. Please, I wouldn't have done that. They'd have probably let me have done it, but I'm not going to go tell them that. It's my responsibility to take care of myself. So I think we ought to do that. Y'all ought to do that. I need to do that. I think that the occasional bout for some of us is inevitable. I think for others of us that if we simply took these preemptive strikes, we could probably prevent that spiraling down thing. If we took 2 weeks vacation back to back instead of here and here and rushing back to preach and doing all those things that we think maybe we have to do, and if we got more exercise and we got more sleep, what you thought maybe was a spiritual problem, it might just kind of disappear, which it seems kind of silly, but I think that's definitely possible. So, don't get burned out, and if you do, do something about it. I wish I had a really cool ending, but I don't. Any questions? Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I hadn't gotten up the gumption to talk to my guys. The Auburn Institute says you need to have an extended period away every 4 or 5 years. That'd probably be a push for most of our places. I've been at Harpeth Hills 6. I'm starting to think about approaching my elders about getting an extended period of time off next summer. But I haven't even started planning it. But they're big on away 2 months at a time. And see, what you got to fight is, well, the guy working down at Ford, you don't see him getting 2 months off at a time. Well, you know, the guy at Ford's not preaching 48 Sundays a year either. You're comparing apples and oranges. And if the Christian schools give their teachers sabbaticals, it's a similar concept. So, anybody in here ever even local work ever been on sabbatical? I do not. Not many of us. Kind of. Okay. What are you going? Do you know what you're going to do yet? Okay. So yeah, Auburn Institute's big on that, and you can talk to, you know, some Christian school folks. My guess is, did they offer, or did you have to ask? Really? That's wonderful. How about you ever done sabbatical? Okay. Right. Okay. Okay.
I approached my elders after 12 years. And after going to an Alvin Institute seminar, and I said, I felt like I needed a sabbatical. And I had students that worked sabbatical. And when I told them, and then they got off the floor from last year, I knew there probably wasn't a whole lot of hope here.
I don't know if there's a plan for, because I mean that is different from most places. So I don't know how you would proceed to get that into place. I don't think you'd do it overnight. You wouldn't like in April say, "Can I have July off?" I mean there'd have to be more planning to it than that.